When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mac Rumors Show. Hartley, it has been an incredibly busy last few weeks. With really just tons of things happening at the worst times, as usual. It's gotten to the point where people know that this is basically just a running gag at this point. And, you know, I think I tweeted a couple of days ago, like, can Apple please stop releasing things while I'm on vacation? That would be great. And they're like, what is this, like the fifth time this has happened? And I don't know, it's been a lot. But that's great because now I've got content for when I get home. And so, go ahead.
We may as well have had an Apple event, effectively, for all that's been announced.
I mean, basically. We already knew about the iPhone SE, but I have had it since, like, what, last 60. Thursday? What did I just did it again.
Yep.
Even before we started recording. It, guys, if I say SE, I mean 16E, and I'm going to apologize now, but I'll probably just keep forgetting that it's been rebranded. But the iPhone 16E has been in my possession for the last week. And yeah, I mean, I've got a little bit of a hot take and I would love to hear your thoughts. I kind of like it. I think it's mostly just that it's so freaking light and it just feels nice in the hand compared to what I'm used to using, which is a 16 Pro Max. And it just works really well. It's just an iPhone that works well and it has everything that I would pretty much need except for, you know, in certain scenarios, the cameras, the main camera is great. It's just like pretty much what I get on all my other ones. But when you need to, you know, kind of punch in, it's not good. I was at Disney World over the last few days and I took a lot of pictures and it would have been helpful at times to have that 5X telephoto zoom. Maybe once or twice did I need to like do the ultra wide so that I could capture everything, but I don't really think I need that. I just kind of took a couple of steps back and that was fine enough. But in some scenarios, it would have been helpful to have that ultra wide to move back without, you know, having to bump into a bunch of people behind me. But otherwise, I really missed the telephoto lens. Sometimes the 2X was fine, but like most of the times I really needed to go a little bit further. What are your thoughts on that aspect? Like, could you live without all of those lenses and just have one really good lens?
Probably not. I am a huge fan of the telephoto camera. That's why I'm very excited for the iPhone 17 Pro later this year, where that camera should be bumped up to 48 megapixels as well. But I think for most people, for the sort of people that are interested in buying this device, one camera is actually perfect. I think that the way that the entry-level models, at least not the iPhone SE in previous years, but you know, when we're talking iPhone 15, iPhone 16, the ultra wide is a little bit of a redundant lens on those devices. I don't think that many people who buy those devices probably ever use that lens. And I think for those customers that just need a really good camera to take photos of food and documents and people and just ordinary everyday stuff, I think it's a really good camera. And just being able to punch in just a little bit to 2X is pretty much good enough for now.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I felt, honestly. It's, you know, that I kind of used it as my main device for those few days at Disney. And it did everything I needed it to do. Like, I never once was like, ah, man, I really wish I pulled out my, except for, again, just a couple of times where I needed to go just a little bit further on the telephoto. But otherwise, I was fine with it. And the pictures turned out pretty nice. I mean, I think they look good. And I'll have a review up, like, by the time you're watching this, it should be the same day. So if you want to go check it out, it'll be kind of my 1 week in. Another thing that I tried to test out a little bit more was I got Verizon service added to this. And still have Verizon on my other one. So I wanted to make sure that I had two phones with the same service at the same area. And I did a couple of speed tests. I don't know what the way to go about this would be. It's so early. It needs to be a long-term thing. But brief initial thoughts on the C1 chip was that I think the most important thing was that it was more consistent than my other phone. In areas where, like, I would see less bars, I would have more full bars, if that makes sense. And, like, the speeds were consistently the same, whereas I would be, in some scenarios, it would be dropping down quite a bit on my 16 Pro Max. But then there were other times, and it was a handful of times, where I would notice that I'd get a little bit slightly faster speeds on the 16 Pro Max. So it's just kind of, like, it's more of a consistency thing in terms of, like, I didn't run into as many dead zones as I would with the 16 Pro Max. But the speeds, those were just kind of all over the place. So I wouldn't add that as more of a consistent thing, but like just more of like the reliability of the connection, which is good for battery life. And the battery was fantastic. Like it held up really, really well. Again, it's only been a week, so I really need to keep going with it. But I mean, everything that Apple points out to it was fine. I just, you know, one case in my house, there is a very particular dead zone. It's in my upstairs bathroom. Don't judge me. We all do it, okay? Where the service for both Wi-Fi and, weirdly, for cellular, just horrible. It just doesn't work. And I will say it worked a little bit better on the 16E. So is that the C1 kicking in? Is it a placebo effect? I really can't tell you. But, you know, I'm hoping that this is true because then we do have a major breakthrough on our hands and that it should only get better from here. With each generation of the chip. Now, how do you feel about those thoughts on the C1?
I think that really we're just at the start here of where we go with Apple's custom modems. And at this stage, all it really needs to do is work in the background and to the point that you're not really aware that it's a different component. You're not aware that you don't have millimeter wave. It just works. And then if we can get to the point over the next few years where it becomes even more efficient, they add millimeter wave and ultimately it ends up being integrated directly into the actual system on chip itself. Perfect. And then we're not that far away from having it on the iPad, the Mac, the Vision Pro. And it really starts to open up some more possibilities because right now in the rest of the lineup, Qualcomm's modems are quite power-hungry components, and that's part of the reason why the iPhone 16e has such good battery life.
I gotta say, one last thing on this is that I do think I really like the look of this, too. It's so clean.
It does look good.
It does, right? Like,
it's the small camera.
It is. It really is.
It that just is very clean. We're very used to these big camera bumps now, which actually, I've kind of got over the big camera bump, but it's a very charming little device.
It really is.
I feel like if this was my first iPhone, I would be really happy with that. Yeah, the only thing that when I picked one up in the Apple store the other day that I was just a little bit surprised by, I guess, was the bezels. Because, of course, I'm used to an iPhone 16 Pro's bezels.
Look at this. They're so chunky compared to what we're used to.
And it's just ever so slightly thicker. And I don't know why. Yeah. I just wasn't fully expecting it. But, of course, it's basically an iPhone 14.
Yeah, that was going to be my last thing that I was going to say was like, man, were these really this big? Or am I misremembering something? It has been a few years, so I guess I really don't know. But
if you're coming from, say, difference. An iPhone 13, an iPhone 12 or older, you won't really notice any difference. And you're only looking at upgrades really there other than MagSafe, obviously.
Yeah, and that's been the only other bummer. I have been charging this phone wirelessly, but I would put it on something that just lays flat. And it works fine, but it is a bummer because I do use MagSafe quite a bit, mostly for charging And I mean, I guess you can get around it with the whole case stuff. Apple is not weirdly doing that, though. They're kind of just going to let third-party manufacturers take advantage of this, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. But yeah, I mean, that's the iPhone SE. Again, I'll have a full like 1 week in review where you'll hear more of my thoughts by the time you watch this. In theory, it should be out. So please go check it out. But that is just the tiny bit of news that we got, because we already knew about it and now we just actually got to see it in real life. But we have other products that were just announced and another week full. Yeah, well, I guess it wasn't a week full, but it was 2 days worth, and it kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, we knew these were coming, but like it just kind of happened out of nowhere, where we got like, oh, another Tim Cook tweet, another Tim Cook, you know, he's like back from his hiatus of, you know, doing these minor product launches and is now fully invested. So we got first the iPad Air and the 11th generation iPad. Let's quickly touch on the 11th gen iPad, because there's really not much there. We can mostly spend our time talking on what's not there. But first, let's just go through what's different. And that is, now it has an A16 Bionic chip and more storage. So it doesn't go, what was it, 64 and 256 were the main two and only options, and now you have 128 to 512, which is nice.
Yeah, so three options now. And that effectively represents a price cut for that entry-level model. People always argue about whether this really does count as a price cut, but the fact is now you will get twice as much storage for the same price.
For the same price. Yeah, I agree. That counts. In a roundabout psychological way, it does work.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think 64 gigabytes is a little bit too small in 2025 for basically everyone, I would say. I think 128 gigabytes is the sweet spot now, considering that, especially with the iPad, I feel like a lot of people download movies, TV shows on those devices.
Absolutely.
And Apple Intelligence takes up, of course, this isn't relevant for the entry-level iPad, which we'll come to, but on most devices, when you bear in mind that Apple Intelligence takes up quite a lot of space and will only take up more space in the future, we really do need to be future-proofing these devices. Where my family have devices that are 64 gigabytes, there are storage limits that are hit on that quite frequently. And they're not doing anything crazy with those. It's just, I just don't think it's quite enough for the average user now.
I agree. I recently had to pull out a bunch of iPads for my kids for the trip, because we don't usually give them iPads, especially our younger ones. They have full reign to use our TV to watch stuff, but only when we travel does it make the most sense for them to have an iPad so that they got something to do on these long trips. And so I had to pull them out, and I noticed that like one of the main things I always run into is kids' headphones are always wired for the most part. And one of the things that I've never really had an issue with before for myself was that these iPads don't have headphone jacks. But the other issue is that there's just not enough space. They want games, they want TV shows, and it's just like we get the bare minimum iPads for that. And so I am happy to see that 128 is starting to become the norm. I have a base 64 gig iPad Air from a couple years ago, and that's what I use for like the teleprompter, basically, for my studio here, and a couple of other things, but mostly just that. And it's run out of space multiple times, and I have no idea how. I think it's just from all of the other things that I do that are just kind of syncing throughout the iPad. It is not enough. And so you mentioned with, you know, Apple Intelligence, that's going to be a thing, but kind of scratching our head here, why are we raising the storage if you can't run Apple Intelligence on this iPad? Which is what I mean by saying that we can spend more time talking about what it doesn't have, and that is it doesn't have the ability to run Apple Intelligence. So you need an A17 Pro for that, correct?
Yes, and crucially, you need 8 gigabytes of memory. The iPad now has 6, which is more than it previously had with the A14 and the 10th generation. It had just 4 gigabytes. So you can expect considerably better performance from this. I mean, it's effectively jumping 2 chip generations, and it's got 50% more memory, but just without Apple Intelligence, which is a little bit strange, considering that the whole iPhone lineup at the end of this year, if they discontinue the 15 and 15 Plus, as I expect they will, they will all have Apple Intelligence. The iPad Mini has Apple Intelligence. The whole Mac lineup has Apple Intelligence. Every other iPad, every iPad with an M series chip at all runs Apple Intelligence. So it's a little bit odd that they didn't give it either an A17, or in all likelihood, I was surprised that it didn't have a binned A18 chip. Because if you were buying this device, I'm guessing you're the sort of person that doesn't buy an iPad every year. You probably don't even buy an iPad every 2 years, or maybe even every 3 years. If you buy this iPad, you probably want it to last you. I would expect that you probably would want to have Apple Intelligence for the long run. Now, the other side of that argument is, if you're buying the entry-level iPad, you probably don't care about Apple Intelligence anyway.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I had to look up the price for a second. Is it still $379, or is it $429?
$329, I think it is.
$329 for the new one. I wanted to double check this because
I think it's been that for a while. When the 10th gen debuted, I believe it debuted at $449. And then the price was slowly brought down to where the entry-level iPad used to be.
So it's $349.
$349.
Yes. It starts at $349, $449, and $649, which is interesting. Why is it more to jump up another 128 gigs? Or no, actually, you're doubling. That's never mind. I'm dumb. I guess you're doubling the storage every time. Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, it's $649 for the most. And you can get connectivity, which is also strange because there is no C1 chip on any of these new iPads, which like I thought for sure would be on there.
That was the other thing that we were expecting to see with the cellular models, but apparently not. I mean,
and they even advertised the cellular, like there's like a little each one on the way it's designed on the advertising page for it, the landing page for it, it's like a block of new features, and like one of them was like cellular strength, like fast connectivity or some marketing jargon, and I'm like, oh, that must be C1 chip, right? No, it's just they're just leading you into that. That's weird.
I think the fact is the 10th gen iPad was starting to get a little bit old. I think it has been out for about 2 years at this point. And as I say, it was bumped down in price and was a little bit of a strange iPad when it first debuted because it's not got that laminated display, but it did have the new design. It was the first one with that landscape camera, and it even has quite a different keyboard accessory. But just giving it that performance bump now as a sort of midlife refresh for this device, I think is pretty good considering how cheap it is. And if you just wanted an iPad for occasional use, which realistically is how a lot of iPad users even use their iPad, they basically will just use it maybe to read the odd ebook, for a little bit of light browsing, and probably mainly for content consumption. This iPad will do those things really well, and you can't complain about the price.
Nope, this is what that iPad is for, and it is definitely the iPad, or at least in my kids' school district, it is the iPad of choice for mass in-bulk buying for schools. My daughter has a 10th gen, and my son, when he went to school, he was first of the three, he got a 9th gen, and these iPads follow you until it becomes too, you know, like it basically can't be updated anymore. So he kind of got screwed out of getting at least the newer design, and she just got the 10th gen, which, you know, I'm guessing now they'll start buying 11th gen in the next year or two. But yeah, that is, they always do base iPads, and they use those every day, constantly, for work, but it's totally fine. It's an app, a couple of apps that they use, and it works perfectly fine for them. So that is what these iPads are for. If you are at home and you need an iPad for your kid, for yourself, for travel, that's all you're using it for, is reading, content consumption, that kind of stuff. It is 100% worth it. And it's definitely better than most of the Android alternatives that are out there. I mean, maybe the Samsung one that would kind of directly compete with it would be fine. But like, I don't know. I think it's fair to say, and I am not being biased here, I think most people would agree that Apple just kind of has the tablet chokehold, and that you can just kind of say that most of them are always going to be better than the Android equivalent in most scenarios. So I don't know. Maybe I'd agree. Being biased, but of course you would agree. Have you ever used an Android tablet before?
Nope.
I do. I will say I like my Pixel tablet because it's got the whole speaker thing. That's pretty cool. And then occasionally we let my kids like go and take it off the stand and do something with it and then put it back. Like, that's pretty cool. I want Apple to make an equivalent. I think that would be great. But yeah. Now, we did get an iPad Air, effectively getting the same type of update.
Well, in some ways, it's possibly even smaller.
Yeah.
Because there's no memory increase, which at least there is for the entry-level iPad. It is just a chip refresh.
Well, the biggest thing is really just the new keyboard case, which is sad.
That does, I mean, for the device itself,
it
is just the move from the M2 to the M3, which is...
Well, don't dismiss the keyboard case, because if you're picking up a 13-inch, you need it.
It's a separate... some people won't even buy that accessory.
Well, you should. If you are getting the big one, you should.
I agree with
that. That's my recommendation. But go ahead.
And it's still quite pricey, that keyboard. It's a bit of a weird product because it misses out on three features that are on the iPad Pro's one. So it doesn't have backlighting. It doesn't have an aluminium top case with the palm rests. And it also doesn't have a haptic trackpad. It's still a physical click. And yet this is like a $300 keyboard. It's better than the previous one. You've got the function row. It's got a bigger trackpad. It's undoubtedly a better product with a new hinge. But
the price got reduced by like $30, right? Isn't it like somewhere like $30 less? Somewhere around there. I think it's $319 now.
It's just an iterative refresh. I think that's what's clear with both of these new iPads. I'm glad that this has happened. I'm not criticizing it at all, but there's nothing revolutionary going on here. What this is it's keeping very popular devices up to date. And we're very hypocritical in the tech community because when we don't get any updates, we say, well, nothing's going on. Why does Apple leave it 2 or 3 years to refresh this device? And then when we get a device like this, which has actually come, 10 months after
it hasn't even been a full year.
and they've added a new chip and a redesigned keyboard. We kind of shrug our shoulders. But actually, this is really what we want. This is a good thing. Because if I was in the market for an iPad Air right now, I would be very pleased with this device, and I would be glad that it's got an M3 instead of an M2, and I would be glad that it's got this redesigned keyboard instead of the previous one.
Yeah, but for my people who maybe just recently got an M2 iPad Air like 3 months ago, because you're thinking, well, surely they're not going to update this in 3 months. It's not even been a year at that point. Well, they did, and the only thing that we just talked about that's really worth your time upgrading to is possibly the keyboard if you... A, don't have one, or maybe didn't get the Apple-specific one, I do highly recommend. I haven't even seen it yet.
Previous generations.
That's where I was getting at. I will highly recommend that if there is anything that you should be happy about, it's that you can buy this new keyboard, and it will work with your M2 and M1? Would it work with the M1? No, just the fourth gen.
What are you referring to?
For the Air.
The Air? Did the Air ever... Yeah, so it will work everything from the A14 iPad Air upwards. So it will work for the A14 model, the M1, the M2, and now the M3. So you've got four different generations there.
Okay. So yeah, if you're looking at it that way, I mean, I would say that this is definitely going to be an upgrade just because I do think the function row is kind of important to have on that keyboard to the point where I would want it strictly for that reason. I kind of hate that they got rid of the black. I loved the white, and then I just recently started using the black case again, and I'm like, oh, I kind of like this. And now you only get the white option, which is kind of a bummer because it does get dirty quite a bit. But it's a really good keyboard case, so at least you can get that, and you're not being shunned out of it. And it's pretty close enough to the Pro. You know, they have to do some kind of separation there to make it be kind of that distinguishable factor between a Pro and a non-Pro, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, that's really the iPad Air. I mean, there's really nothing else. What else are you going to do to iPad these days without making it more of a software-related feature set than it would be hardware? Unless you make it fold, Where else are we going to go from here with the iPads?
I'm not sure where else you really go with the iPad. I think the iPad Pros, the new models, while they're really overkill, I think the hardware is some of the best hardware that Apple has really offered in a single package. They're incredibly thin. The displays are outstanding. It's very powerful. I mean, I don't really worry about the back camera. I'm not clamoring to have a 48 megapixel camera on the back there just for document scanning.
But I mean, we could remove the camera entirely, and I don't know that I'd miss it, to be honest with you.
It's good to be there for document scanning. And there are plenty of people that do use it, say, for AR or where they need to blow up an image in real time on the larger display. So it's definitely worth having one camera there. The ultra wide was unnecessary, but a single camera is good. But I don't really know where the iPad goes here long term. I think it's such a mature product. I think that possibly there are some things that can come over from the iPhone. Obviously, the bezels can get thinner. We also could look at maybe getting the action button, maybe a second USB-C port, possibly even MagSafe from the Mac would be quite nice. Obviously, we can look at getting the C1 modem or a future modem to help prolong battery life, because iPad battery life still has a little bit of a way to go in my experience. But it's just such a good, it's a good product. Like, I know we complain about the software, but short of overhauling that and making it run macOS, and that's a whole separate discussion. In terms of the actual hardware that you buy, I think it's incredibly good.
Yep, I agree. I think that there's really nowhere else to go right now, and we'll kind of just see, you know, where we are in a few years. I'm still itching for some sort of foldable iPad. I think that's the next breakthrough. But yeah, as of right now, this is for those who are running something really old in the iPad Air category and they want something that can handle a lot of work but don't really need the Pro, you know, features. This is kind of that perfect. We've talked about
if you're coming before. From the a model that is before the fourth gen, so before that A14 model, before the redesign year, I think this is a good upgrade. It's not obviously not worth coming from one of the M1 or M2 models, and it's borderline coming from the A14 model. It probably is only worth it if you're going to go from the A14 to the 13-inch, and particularly if you actually are aware that it's maybe your only computer, you don't have a laptop, and you would benefit from the new camera with Center Stage. You would benefit from Apple Pencil Pro support. And you would benefit from improved multitasking, that sort of thing. But for most users, it's probably not worth it. It's just a nice upgrade. It's good to keep everything in the lineup up to date.
Yep. Speaking of everything in the lineup up to date, let's switch on over to MacBook Air, which was yesterday's announcements. We got we're basically doing the same thing here, but did get a new color. What do you feel? How do you feel about Apple's 6,000th shade of blue? Do you like this one?
I do like this one. I was a very big fan of Sierra Blue on the iPhone 13 Pro, and this reminds me a lot of that. It's a very subtle blue. And also, I have grown to hate space gray. So I'm really pleased to see that color being replaced. The only thing that's a bit strange to me is that this blue is a very light blue. It's almost silver. And they also offer it in silver. And they also offer it in starlight, which is very close to silver. So it's like three different shades of silver. You can have warm silver, neutral silver, or cool silver.
Just depends on what mood you're in, what kind of silvery mood you're in.
And really, there's two shades of blue because midnight is also a bluish shade. You've got dark blue and light blue.
I think they're all just shades of blue at this point. I mean, it's sky blue. It's very light, like you said. I do like the look of it, maybe just because it's new. I did not like Sierra Blue after a while. I think at that point, I liked it because it was something different. And then, I don't know, it was kind of my least favorite after a year of use. But we'll see how this goes. It's nice to see something different on that form factor anyways. That is the one that I went with, so I'm interested to see how it is in person. But otherwise, I mean, we got the M4 chip on it. It did get a price decrease, correct? It's down to $999 now.
Yes.
which I will say, there's probably nothing better out on the market for $999 in a laptop format. You will not get anything better.
And $899 with education pricing.
Yeah, I mean, right there, it's just pretty unbeatable. And even the M2 models, the M2s are sticking around, right?
Nope. So the way that it worked before was that you could get the M2 for $999, and then you could bump up to the M3 for $200 more.
M3, my bad.
But Apple has now replaced both models, and that's why this starts at a lower price point. So it's good proposition.
You can't get it officially from Apple, but you can definitely get it from other places. Best Buy is currently offering it for $799. And that also makes it one of the best laptops that you can get at that price point, if not the best. I would love to see what other options you can get from other competitors at that price point that can do what this, you know, Mac can do. The only thing that kind of sucks about it is the storage options for the entry level is still not great. I don't love 256, but
I think that's for a lot of people. I mean, bear in mind,
we still have this conversation every year.
If we were talking about a pro model, maybe, but if you're just you're a student, you just need a Mac to, you know, write your assignments, 256 is fine.
It is the official, just like the iPad Air is kind of the official one for, or I mean the normal iPad is the official one for younger kids and students. This is kind of the same for college students, and you know, maybe you need a laptop for high school or something. This is your jam right there. So, I mean, that's really it. What else are we missing?
You get the upgraded camera. So you get the same 12 megapixel camera stage that was on the iMac and on the MacBook Pro, which was sorely needed. Previously, it was a 1080p camera. That's actually what I'm using now on an older M1 MacBook Pro, and it looks fine. It's not fantastic. But these new 12 megapixel cameras are considerably better. And center stage with desk view is actually really nice. I always enjoy center stage when I have it on. It can sometimes be a bit funny. It can be a bit weird. But it actually is pretty handy. I quite just like leaving that on in the background.
Have you ever used desk view for anything? Besides just knowing that.
I've never used desk view. But I imagine that for some people, that is useful. But I have
it is witchcraft.
You know, it's like I'm not like working on anything physical that I need to show off. Everything that I work on is digital. But if I was an artist or I was writing something or I was modeling something, I think that would be pretty useful.
I will say, I don't think I'm saying anything I'm not allowed to say. In my briefing with Apple for the 16E, they did use Desk View to showcase the iPhone in hand and in person. And it was very handy. So good on Apple for showing us how useful that feature is for them.
That's a good example.
Yeah. I mean, they were like, here's the phone. It's right in front of me. So that was pretty cool. Is there anything else with the MacBook Air before we move on to our final announcement?
Not that comes to mind. I mean, we're really talking color option, chip, price.
Where do we go from here with this? It's not going anywhere, right? It's going to be like this for a long time.
For a few years, yes. I mean, long term, I think I would really like to see the MacBook Air get an OLED display with ProMotion. I would like to see it get a cellular option as well, which I think is safe to say that's on the way. I would also like to see it possibly get one more USB-C port as well. And to me, at that point, it is the perfect laptop.
Do we think the MacBook Pros get a C1 at some point this year?
I think they'll get like a C3 or a C4. Bear in mind, we've got to get it. First of all, we need to get it in all the iPhones. Then we need to get it in the iPad. And then we can look at other products like Vision Pro and the Mac. We've never had a cellular Mac. So it's quite a while away, I think. But
that's
pretty exciting.
That's where I disagree, though. Like, I don't know why it can't be in the Mac, because that is going to, it's something that we've never had before. So I think just having it there, whether it be not as good as what it could be with other people who have done it before in the past, we don't know any better. We really don't. So it's like, just give it to us and allow us to have something is better than nothing at this point. And it's still such a niche thing for most people who probably don't need it, that it's kind of like a good testing ground. Like they put it in the C or the 16E because it was a phone that not so many people are going to have, where it would be causing mass hysteria if it ended up not being very good. You know, they didn't put it in the flagship iPhone yet. So I feel like a MacBook Air or like a entry level MacBook Pro or all the Macs really, would be a good starting ground for this because it's such a niche thing still. Like, not everyone needs that. Not everyone needs it in an iPad. You know, at the very least, the iPad Air should have had it. But, you know.
We'll get there. I think they just want to give it time. They want to make sure it's good. And if there is a C2 that's right around the corner with millimeter wave support and improved efficiency, I understand why Apple wants to hold off for that.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, with so much travel that I've been doing over the last 3 months, I'm like, I just would love to have that now. So I am being selfish and antsy, and I will try my best to reel it back a little bit and hope that it's refined and good when we do actually get it. All right, the last thing was the Mac Studio finally got an upgrade, and weirdly enough, we have an M3 Ultra chip, but also an M4 Max, which to me is still incredibly confusing. Which one do you go with? Do you go with an M4 Max or do you go with an M3 Ultra? Can you clear this up a little bit for us?
I think it depends on your workflow and your specific needs, because ultimately the M4 generation has more powerful cores. They have a higher clock speed for single core tasks. The M4 Max will probably be better. But if you're working with graphics, which if you're looking at an M3 Ultra, you probably are, that is going to be more powerful for the sort of things you would even consider buying a Mac Studio for. This would be a little bit stranger in something like the MacBook Pro, where there's a much more diverse audience that is interested in buying that product. But when you consider how compelling the Mac Mini is, if you're really considering a Mac Studio, you probably appreciate multi-core tasks and graphics, in which case the M3 Ultra will still be better.
Yeah, I agree. It's just, it's still just strange to, like, I mean, I guess the people that are looking at this will probably be able to figure out the difference because you're, you know, someone who is definitely not just a casual user. You're probably pretty intense and need it for something. If you're not, then you're making a pretty big mistake in a purchase, I would say. Unless you're just some rich guy who just wants a desktop computer and doesn't care what money it is or how much money it is. But it just seems weird to the general public out there who's looking at these announcements and being like, why would anyone buy an M3 Ultra over an M4 Max? Like M4 over M3, that just seems like it would be better, right? But then the Ultra and the Max name kind of cancels each other out a little bit. I don't know. But you just broke it down pretty nicely. I just think it's strange that this is the time that
we got this. If this was ordinary consumers, I think it would be very confusing. But if you're going to drop $4,000 on a specced up Mac, chances are you probably know what you're buying.
This is also a good time to say that for most people who are looking at this, who probably don't need it, but want it anyways, aka people like me who make content like they do, and they do need a more powerful machine potentially than some of the other things out there, but maybe an Ultra is way too much. That M4 Max starting at like, what, $2,000 is such a good deal, I feel like, for most people out there, that I think you're really going to enjoy. If you've never had a Mac Studio before and you're looking to get into a good desktop, I think you'll really like it. But otherwise, I don't know, get an M4 Max, like MacBook Pro maybe? Is that a better value? I don't know where to look at this.
It all depends on your need. I mean, if you need a desktop computer that you're going to primarily use with multiple monitors and you need a lot of connectivity built in, then this makes more sense.
Sure.
I think that the market for the Mac Studio is pretty small now because the Mac Mini is so good. With the M4 Pro option, you really only are looking at the Mac Studio if you need serious multi-core performance, serious graphics performance, or you need larger amounts of memory. And of course, now you can configure the Mac Studio with up to 512 gigabytes of memory.
Yeah, and it starts at 96 instead of 60, or yeah, right? 96 instead of 64. And you can get up to 80 cores of GPU power, which is just wild. And 16 terabytes of SSD now, that has been doubled. So you can get 16 terabytes of internal SSD storage. That's wild. So, I mean, there's definitely a need for some of this for some people out there, I guess. But it's definitely not me or anyone for the most part probably listening to this. If it is you, I would love to know what you're doing. And, you know, I'm just fascinated by people who require this much power. And so I really want to know. So hit us up, let us know. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of the Mac Studio. What happens to the Mac Pro from here? Briefly, what do you think? Where is the Mac Pro going to go?
I imagine the Mac Pro is going to get the M3 Ultra, probably in a press release at some point in the next few months.
Okay, that's weird. Why not just do it this week? That was, you know.
No idea. Probably will be very quiet. I mean, no one really buys that device. If the people that buy the Mac Studio is a dwindling audience, the number of people that are buying a Mac Pro over a Mac Studio, so you specifically need PCIe. But of course, you can't have graphics cards. So you're someone that needs a lot of built-in storage that you need to be able to add and swap yourself. You need peculiar ports that can interface directly with PCIe or other unique custom components that work with applications for specific workflows. I mean, it's a very... I imagine the number of Mac Pros they now sell is probably in the thousands worldwide. Yeah. They probably sell like 5,000 to 10,000 of them a year.
I'll be honest with you. For our M3 Ultra unit, I would have gone with a Pro rather than a Studio simply because I'm looking at a Studio just or a Pro just sitting over there that hasn't been plugged in forever, that has, I believe it's 64 terabytes of storage that could be used in a PCIe card that I can't use because it's still an Intel Mac and I don't want to use that anymore. So it's just sitting there being wasted and I kind of want to use that again because it is really nice having, although it's not like the actual main storage that you're booting up with, it's really nice to have that just integrated with the body and, you know, having it there immediately when you turn on your computer. So I don't know. I think there is a market for that too. But like you said, it's very, very small. Again, that's another thing I would love to know. If you're listening to this and you're buying either one of these and perhaps one of them happens to be a Mac Pro, why exactly do you need it? Is it, again, for the PCIe or like what? I mean, I know it's going to be for that reason, but like what exactly, like what specific thing are you adding in that you need it for? Okay, and the last thing I do want to mention is, and this is a spoiler warning here, if you haven't watched Severance, this would be episode 7, right?
I don't know. I just know I'm caught up.
Yeah, I think it's 7. The one that aired on, not on, what's today? Okay, the one that didn't come out on March 7th. So when you're listening to this, the one that came out today, we haven't seen yet. So this would be last week's. Just like 2 minutes, Hartley. What are you... I mean, it was a big episode. I just watched it yesterday because I was gone. So it's still fresh in my brain. I'm finally caught up and I'm just like, I need to talk about it with somebody. So
I don't think it revealed an awful lot. I think there's still a lot of unanswered questions.
I think it introduced more unanswered questions.
Yes. And my theory now is a lot of people talk about cloning. I don't think it's cloning.
No, me neither.
I think it's going to be more in line with reanimating the dead.
Okay. I could see that. So I think in our Q&A episode from last week that we shot a couple of weeks ago, I think I said it. I was fully into the clone theory, and now that I've seen the last couple of episodes, I am shifting away. I can do that, so you know, don't yell at me. We're all entitled to changing our opinions. I think it could be the reanimation, like you said, but I also think it maybe just might be some sort of way that they figured out to kind of lure her in. And I don't know why, but they lured her into kind of just wanting to sever her life because of maybe the traumatic things that she went through with the whole, you know, infertility and miscarriage stuff. It kind of looked like their life deteriorated, the personal life outside of what you would be with, like, work. So I feel like somehow Miss Cobell, who lived next door, but did she really live next door? Because it looked like they're in a completely different home than when Mark is now. You know, somehow she figured out her way to get into their life. There was a lot of things that subconsciously kind of filtered into Gemma's life, like the clinics that they went to were run by Lumen. The cards that were sent to her randomly that they were looking at were by Lumen. Like, there was a lot of things that they were just kind of subconsciously entering their life. I feel like that, you know, the night before she died, when she said goodbye, like, she knew that she was going to kind of agree to do this severance somehow, of some way, so that she could kind of get a break from her life. Maybe we're looking into this too much. I don't know. It's just so crazy. And then, you know, they kind of trapped her into being there for way longer than she agreed to. But yeah, she's not dead. We know that for sure. And it doesn't seem to be a clone. So I don't know. I think Cold Harbor is the night she died. Obviously, that just makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Probably, although I don't know, because it seems that each room is a different, it's not, she's not been severed two ways with work and personal life. She's been severed for each individual room, and each individual room seems to be a different unpleasant thing, a different suffering. Sure. So it's like 100 different severed personalities with 100 different sufferings, which suggests that Cold Harbor is one of the sufferings. So I wonder if Cold Harbor is actually going to kill her and bring her back to life, if that's the last thing. So I feel like it's something in that area.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, are those her actual unpleasant memories? Or are those just ones that they created that they're putting her through for some weird reason? Which is very cruel. But I guess you don't have to, like, remember it because it's a severed personality. And it's weird that this doctor is a part of all of them, and he seems to, like, genuinely like her, which is kind of creepy and weird. So I don't know, man. It did introduce a lot of weird stuff, but it's so good. Do you agree, or are you still like, I don't know, I don't think it's that good?
No, I do think it's really good. It's probably engaged me more than any show for a long time, but I just really hope that it pays off. That's all I'm saying, because I think it's got a lot of questions. All it seems to do is introduce more questions.
That's without bad, though. That's
really
good writing.
Answering them, and they can run for two more seasons, but I just hope they're not going to tie this up in two episodes right at the end and leave many questions unanswered, because I've experienced that many times with shows. We all have. And so I'm just staying a little bit tentative until we have some answers and see if they actually deliver.
Yeah, that's it. That's this week's episode. I guess next week we'll talk a little bit about what these devices are like, I guess. I don't know how we can really make it more than just like, oh, they exist. They're there. They're products that are here. But I'll give you a little bit of my thoughts on them when I get my hands on them next week. So with that said, we'll catch everybody in the next episode.